Well, in the world of jazz, it's kind of the best of times and the worst of times. Jazz has always made periodic forays into the popular conversation, but we seem to be in a part of that cycle where jazz is being kind of forgotten, at least by the masses, despite the emergence of younger artists like Kamasi Washington and Robert Glasper and Keon Harold and the success of organizations like Jazz at Lincoln Center and maybe to a lesser extent the San Francisco Jazz Center. Even major music festivals are leaving jazz off the bill. The headliners at this coming summer's Montreux Jazz Festival, arguably the big daddy of all European jazz festivals, Lionel Richie and Lenny Kravitz, real giants of jazz there. You see what I mean? But the good news is that thanks to the internet and smaller venues, jazz can still be found everywhere. And the overhyped artistic wars of the 1980s and 1990s, which pitted the free improvisers against the so-called traditionalists, well, those are pretty much history. Which means now we can listen to Armstrong and Basie or the Art Ensemble of Chicago, whatever you want, and still maintain our cool factor. Well, into this world has stepped twin brothers from Washington, D.C., who have embraced jazz from the swing era through bebop, and especially the Great American Songbook. Will and Peter Anderson were going to be with us this morning, along with Ed Dunsavage, but there's a virus going around that had other ideas about it. So joining us this morning are Peter Anderson. Good morning, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
And from the Brit Festival, Kay Hilton.
Good morning.
And from Ashland High School, Travis Modison. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thanks very much. We're going to be talking about why the Anderson brothers are here, and they're part of the Brit Festival Education Program. They're also going to be performing two shows this weekend in the Rogue Valley. More about that in a few minutes. But I want to start with some music. Peter Anderson there playing Cherokee and some great licks there from these guys. So, Peter, you guys were growing up in Washington, D.C., and a lot of musicians I talk to say, you know, I found out about music because my parents had a really cool record collection, and that's what maybe pushed them into music. What about you?
It didn't quite happen that way, although when Tower Records was around, every day after school, we would be at Tower Records in the jazz section just checking out all the Duke Ellington and Count Basie and John Coltrane and Charlie Parker. And so those days of Tower Records are kind of over. But we were really we really got into playing our instruments from the public school program. So we started in the fourth grade, started playing clarinet, and then when our hands were big enough to play the saxophone, we started the saxophone. So we can really thank the initial spark to be our public school music programs, believe it or not. And that really had a big impact on us starting to play the instruments. And, you know, we were auditioning for county band and state band. And then when we just, you know, were able to play a little bit, we were able to start mimicking some of these recordings, you know. So we would hear some of the great jazz players on the saxophone, Charlie Parker, Lester Young, and Coleman Hawkins. And we started, you know, by ear, taking a lot of these songs and solos off of the recordings. And that's what allowed us to kind of develop these skills to interact and play with other musicians. So, you know, once you start learning by ear, it allows you to collaborate with other musicians without music in front of you. And that's the kind of key for jazz.
So at the same time, your peers were probably, you know, if they were getting into music, they were probably learning how to scrape samples off the internet and create hip hop on their MacBooks. So what about this music of an earlier generation, actually probably two earlier generations, really attracted you guys? Why did you head, you know, basically toward a historical music?
Yeah, well, you know, in this day and age of, you know, everyone's on social media and on their computers, I just think being in front of a live band and in front of an audience is something that's really special. And it's really not going away. I mean, you're seeing, you know, comedians and lecturers and people still being able to sell out auditoriums. People aren't watching them on Netflix or on YouTube or anything. And music's the same way. You know, performing in front of a live audience is never going to go away. There's something about, you know, the instruments vibrating and the sound going directly into the listener's ear, and perhaps the audience having some influence on the performance, whether it be calling out a request or cheering or any of these things. So music is always going to be something that thrives in a live situation. Although the internet and iTunes and YouTube, there have been a lot of good things that come out of that. Young students can learn music faster, and young students are really learning music faster than I think they ever have. So we can be thankful for computers and that sort of thing.
Peter Anderson and his brother Will performing this weekend in the Rogue Valley, and we're talking with him. And we have a couple of other guests with us on the exchange this morning, Kay Hilton from the Brit Festival and Travis Modison from Ashland High School. We'll continue the conversation about jazz here on the Jefferson Exchange in just a moment. Back on the Jefferson Exchange here on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm John Baxter in for this hour for Jeffrey Riley. We're talking jazz here on the Exchange with Peter Anderson, one of the Anderson brothers, with his brother Will. They're performing this weekend in the Rogue Valley. And we also have with us Kay Hilton, who is from the Brit Festival, and Travis Modison from Ashland High School. Now, both of you are involved in education. And we heard Peter talk about, you know, he and his brother being inspired with public school programs. And Travis, I want to talk with you about how music education is going in the school systems these days, because we keep hearing about, oh, music got cut at this school and art got cut over here and, you know, woodshop got cut over at some other school. So what is the state of music education? And especially since we're talking jazz this morning, jazz education in the schools.
Yeah, great question. So in the state of Oregon, the jazz education is moving forward. We're in year two or year three of the OSAA State Jazz Festival competition, which rewards students for excellence in jazz, and which has really helped to push excellence forward. You know, competition is one motivator, especially for young people. It can be very helpful to get to push for levels of excellence. So in the state of Oregon, overall, we've got many great leaders. Greg Hall is coming down from Sunset to work with the group this weekend. Dan Davies doing great things out of Mount Hood. Steve Owen is like one of the master jazz educators in the country. He lives in Eugene. So the state of Oregon is doing really well. Locally, it's a mixed bag. It really depends on the community, and it really depends on the administrator in some schools and the priorities that the schools have set. In our school, we're very lucky because our administration has supported jazz education and has always been big supporters of music. We have gaps in our education program, sure, in our music education. We've got some missing things, like we don't have middle school choir, and one could argue that starting students in fourth and fifth grade, like the Anderson brothers, would be great for our students locally. But we're still very lucky that we've got great jazz support, and we've seen in our own program, by partnering with Britt and by partnering with Ed Dunsavage and other local professionals like Dave Scoggin, we've seen a lot of growth in jazz education and growth in excellence and growth in the culture, growth in all the things that take place around jazz education.
And Kay, this is the second time you've brought Will and Peter to the Valley. How does the Brit Festival tie into the local education programs?
Well, we have a residency program that we run during the school year, and what that allows us to do is bring amazing artists like the Anderson Brothers directly into music classrooms, and we do that in Jackson and Josephine County. And I think we learned that, or we remembered that the Anderson Brothers were here in just a straight-up residency back in 2016. And when I started talking to Travis about helping out and partnering on the Jazz Festival, we thought of the Andersons right away because they were great teachers and great musicians. And we thought they'd be perfect clinicians, headliners for the Jazz Festival. But I think that Ashland High School's budget for this festival maybe doesn't allow for them to bring professionals from New York every year to fulfill those services, and that's where Brit Education can help. Help with cost, help with administration and marketing, and we're very happy to do that.
So there are two concerts. We'll mention this at the end of the program as well, but just give us quickly the details of the two performances. I know that there's one with the Siskiyou Music Project.
That is Friday night.
And that's sold out, right?
I think it's sold out, yeah. Pascal's kind of a small venue, but Pascal Winery is where that is happening. And Siskiyou Music Project is also partnering on the Jazz Festival at large. Ed Densavage will be doing some teaching and some performing as part of that also. This concert is through Siskiyou Music Project on Friday at Pascal Winery. And then the I'll let Travis talk about the main event on Saturday night.
Yeah, so Saturday night, the concert is at Ashland High School. It's in the Mountain Avenue Theater. And it will feature the Ashland High School jazz ensembles and will also feature a regional all-star big band, so students from Grants Pass and Crater and Medford. And what's cool about that is these students come together, rehearse a couple hours, but because they have the common language of jazz and music, they just immediately bond and they start to work on all kinds of great musical ideas and other teamwork concepts within that environment. So that all-star big band will perform, and then the Anderson Brothers will play with Ed Densavage at the end of the evening. It's really an awesome, awesome concert.
We're talking jazz here on the Jefferson Exchange, and since we're talking jazz, why don't we listen to some more of Will and Peter Anderson?
You're listening to our debut release as leaders. My brother and William and I are just releasing our first CD with Mr. Kenny Barron on piano, Kenny Washington on drums, and Ben Wolfe on bass. The CD is a mix of our original compositions. We have three compositions each, as well as four standards from our favorite composers. These composers that we've chosen that aren't our original compositions are Dizzy Gillespie, Cole Porter, Thad Jones, and Bud Powell. And besides the repertoire, just to go into a little bit about the sideman that we chose, Kenny Washington was the first musician that we approached about this project. And we've known Kenny for the past 7 years since we've been in New York City, but actually our first jazz concert that we went to in New York City, we were 14 years old and we saw Jackie McLean, the legendary saxophonist, play, and Kenny Washington was playing with him. And so it was just a thrill to be so inspired by Mr. McLean and Kenny Washington. Ben Wolfe, the bass player, is another one of our mentors in New York City who's been just a thrill to work with. And Mr. Kenny Barron, who his name and reputation speaks for himself. He played with Dizzy Gillespie, Stan Getz, etc. So we're so thrilled to have this band playing with us today. And we're at Systems 2 Studios in Brooklyn, which is a beautiful studio. We're just thrilled to be here. So.
Okay, that was a track that you recorded with Kenny Barron. You narrated over that about, you know, how you went to a concert in New York City and saw the great alto player Jackie McLean. Can you tell us more about that experience in your life?
Yeah, like you mentioned, we grew up in Washington, D.C., and we were lucky enough to have parents who knew that we were interested in jazz. And so when you're interested in jazz, you want to go to New York and hear it in person, you know, from these great players who were all around the New York City area. So when we were young, we came to the Village Vanguard and we heard Jackie McLean, who is since passed away, but he was one of the great alto saxophonists in history. We sat in the front row, so we got to hear these musicians. Cedar Walton was on the piano. I mean, we got to sit right in front of them. And I remember during the concert, Jackie McLean took a minute between pieces to say, "It's so great to see young players here coming to hear this music. And he was very friendly. We got his autograph. We hung out with him in the dressing room and just talked to him just to try to learn about, you know, how he was playing and just all the details about the performance. And, you know, when you learn jazz, you want to get that close contact with people to find out what they're doing, because the music is not always on the page. So that was a great experience.
And I bet this weekend with all the students performing at Ashland High School, you'll have a lot of young people asking for your autograph.
Yeah, absolutely.
When that happens. So,
I hope so.
One of the things that you and your brother, and by the way, I should just step back here and say, those of you who were expecting a live performance, so were we, but unfortunately, Peter's brother Will and Ed Dunsavage are not feeling very well this morning, so we had to do a little bit of improvising of our own, and we're in a different studio this morning. But one of the things that you do with your brother a lot is you dive into the Great American Songbook for your arrangements. So let's just take something from the American Popular Songbook. So let's say you find a song that really moves you. What's next? How do the two of you take that popular song and arrange it for two reed instruments and maybe even a bigger group?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the history of jazz has has been these great artists like Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, Dizzy Gillespie, Louis Armstrong, and they played hundreds of these American songs, and a lot of them were Broadway songs written by Jewish composers like Irving Berlin, George Gershwin, Cole Porter, Harold Arlen. And a lot of what jazz is being able to take a piece of music and interpret it in your own way, which is what all these artists did. That's why when you listen to Frank Sinatra, you know it's not Bobby Darin, and you know it's not whoever, and you can tell that there's a personality to it. So when we take a lot of these great songs, we like to interpret it in our own way. So we'll learn the melody as it was composed by the composer, and then maybe we'll change it a little bit. We'll add some, if I play the melody, we'll add some new harmonies to it. Maybe we'll put a riff or something, and then we'll add some improvisation into it just to give it a new flavor. Just like if you were cooking a meal, you know, there's a recipe there, but maybe you want to change it. You want to do something in your own way. So that's really what jazz is about.
And so as you're doing this, you know, let's say you come up with a riff and your brother says, yeah, I don't know. Does that ever happen where the two of you say, yeah, that was cool, but let's do something different?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about just trial and error. And, you know, another great thing about playing jazz music is you're working with other musicians and you have to negotiate, you know, who's going to play the melody. Is there going to be an intro? What's the instrumentation? Are you talking about drums, bass, piano, saxophone? You know, what dynamic do you want to play it? What's the solo order? There's just so many ingredients and things to arrange. And it really takes teamwork and, you know, a group mentality in order to present jazz. So that's another great set of skills that can be learned from it.
I like that word, negotiate.
Yeah.
It's a negotiation. So there have been a lot of really famous reed duos in jazz.
Okay.
I think of, you know, Wardell Gray and Dexter Gordon, for example, or Gene Ammons, Sonny Stitt, or, you know, Johnny Griffin and Eddie Lockjaw Davis. And, you know, I think back to Wardell Gray and Dexter Gordon. They were notorious for kind of having these battles on stage. They were very friendly battles, but they always kind of were trying to one-up each other. Do you and your brother ever get into that kind of thing?
Yeah, we definitely have competition, but it's always, you know, it's always friendly, and it's always, you know, there to have us get better. You know, whether it be me and my brother or, you know, young students, that's what you really want to do when you're learning jazz. You want to get around people that are better than you, where you can be in a situation where you're learning. So if you play music and you play an instrument, whoever is in your town or in your city and you like the way that they play, you want to follow them around. And you want to, you know, for everything from seeing how they deal with their instrument to what they practice, to what they're thinking about when they're playing, all these things. You really want to try to get around people that are on your level or above.
Even down to like, well, hey, what kind of read do you use?
Right? Yeah, all those questions are fair game, and I think that's something, you know, that my brother and I have, that we're very close. We grew up together. We practice and rehearse together. But you don't have to be identical twins to get that, you know. You know, they always tell the story of like the Beatles and the 10,000 hours of rehearsing, and the synergy that you can create by playing with the same musicians. I think my brother and I have that, but I think tons of other musical groups have that, and it just takes constant practice and rehearsal and constant contact.
Okay, I was going to dance around this, but you opened the door, so I'm going to ask it anyway. You are identical twins.
Yeah.
It's the same old question you've been asked, I bet, a million times. But do you think that there's something about that makes you, the two of you, communicate better on stage?
Yeah, I mean, potentially. My brother and I have had a lot of the same experiences. So, you know, this week we're coming to Oregon together. We're meeting a lot of the same people. We're collaborating with Travis and a lot of these musicians, and all of that has an impact on our musicianship. So it could be the same said for like Branford Marsalis and Wynton Marsalis. They grew up together, playing together. But I don't think you have to be an identical twin to have musical synergy with one another. You know, Travis and I we both brought our horns. We talked about maybe playing a couple notes together. I already know that we're going to have a lot in common, just because we have a love for jazz music, and we both teach and perform and things like that. So maybe we have a leg up being twins, knowing a lot of the same music and stuff, but I don't think you have to be twins to have a strong musical connection with another musician.
And so do each of you perform separately as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do different performing. My brother plays with a group on Wednesdays at Birdland that I'm not part of, and they're excellent. And I go all the time and cheer them on, and you know, so we're very supportive of each other, and we do other projects as well.
All right, we're talking with Peter Anderson, and he and his brother Will are performing in the Rogue Valley this weekend, a concert on Friday night at the Pascal Winery, which is sold out, that's sponsored by the Siskiyou Music Project. And then on Saturday night, they'll be performing at Ashland High School with a lot of really talented young players from around the region, various high schools, and that concert is not sold out yet. So we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the program, tell you how to get tickets, etc. And we're going to take just a moment now to hear some more of Will and Peter Anderson so you can get a feel for their music.
Thank you.
Final segment on this morning's Jefferson Exchange. I'm John Baxter in for this hour for Jeffrey Riley, who is preparing for a live conversation with the artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, Nataki Garrett. Again, that's tonight at 6:30 at the Meese Auditorium in the Art Building on the SOU campus. This hour, we're talking jazz, and we were going to have Ed Dunsavage, as well as both Anderson brothers, Peter and Will, in the studio this morning playing live in our Steve Nelson Performance Studio. But unfortunately, two out of the three of them are ill this morning. So we're kind of improvising on our own. And I, you know, it didn't take long before some instruments came out in the studio. I didn't know that Travis had brought his trumpet. And of course, Will showed up with his reed instruments. And we're actually going to hear something live. This is great. Let's do it. What are you going to play for
sure,
us?
Sure, yeah. So this is the rehearsal and the performance all wrapped in one.
We're very efficient here in public radio. Yes.
This is Don't Get Around Much Anymore by Duke Ellington.
Travis Modison, who is from Ashland High School. And what's your official title there?
I'm the director of bands,
director
so I teach
band.
All the bands.
Great. Playing the trumpet, and Peter Anderson playing the clarinet for us this morning in a very impromptu, as you mentioned, the both the rehearsal and the live performance here on the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for that. That was really fun. That's really fun. So, so Peter, you know, you're holding the clarinet, and you know, back in the days of the big bands, the clarinet was a hugely important instrument. Artie Shaw, Benny Goodman, and then it kind of lost favor. You know, when bebop came around, everybody was playing the saxophone or the trumpet. And so, why did that happen? And why do you think it's coming back, or is it coming back?
Yeah, well, when they developed the saxophone in 1870. So the saxophone is a relatively new instrument compared to the other ones. You know, the trumpet and the violin, these are instruments that are hundreds of years old. And it was designed to have the virtuosity and flexibility of a clarinet. You can play a lot of notes very fast, but it was designed to be powerful and loud like the trumpet. A saxophonist named Sidney Bechet, who was playing the clarinet, he was really a front man, and he had the kind of gusto to be the trumpet player in the band, but he didn't have the volume. So he put down the clarinet and he learned the soprano sax, which is sort of like the clarinet but twice as loud. So I think the saxophone took over simply because of its volume. it could really project, and in an age, you know, in the 30s. Going into the 40s, when there weren't microphones on live performances, volume won. So if you could play the saxophone twice as loud as a clarinet, it took precedent.
And I imagine in some of the smaller, you know, quartets and whatnot in bebop, where you're in these small rooms, you've got to be louder than the drums as well, right?
Yeah.
So is the clarinet making a comeback?
Yeah, I think so. I think you know, there's just tons of young people playing now. There's a program called Essentially Ellington, which is run by Jazz and Lincoln Center. And what that's allowed for is many young high schools and middle schools all around the country to get exposed to this Duke Ellington big band music. And so hundreds of schools around the country are playing it. And clarinet is a big part of Ellington's music and all of his arrangements. So I think that's allowing a lot of high school saxophone sections to say, okay, if we want to enter into the essentially Ellington competition and we want to compete to be in New York and play with Wynton Marsalis, someone's got to play the clarinet. And then you start listening to the recordings and you hear players like Jimmy Hamilton playing the clarinet and just how brilliant he is and how much beauty there is in this instrument. I think that is a big thing that's kind of exposing younger jazz players to the clarinet.
And you mentioned when you and your brother were young, you started with the clarinet mostly for physical reasons, right? Because your small hands could fit around it rather than the saxophone.
Yeah, when you're in fourth grade, you can't quite hold a saxophone at that age. So,
so in your videos, I see a lot of trios, which is what we were going to do this morning.
Well, we had a duo this morning
with Ed Dunsavage. Yes, we have the duo, but where you're using the guitar basically, almost as your rhythm section in a lot of those YouTube videos that I've seen of you guys. And so, what's your favorite setting for your two horns?
Well, besides this one, I guess one cool thing about our trio is that it kind of proves that you don't need a bass, drums, or piano to play jazz. In fact, you don't need any rhythm section instruments like we were playing right now. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of goes back to keeping good time. Jazz is a dance music. Back in the 30s when Benny Goodman was playing, he didn't play concert halls, he played dances. And if people are going to dance to their music, there needs to be steady time. If you're a band and you can't keep steady time, no one can dance to it. So that's something that's really important about jazz music. You go to orchestra concerts and you see the conductor taking a lot of rubato. There's many caesuras where the time kind of stops for a minute and then it continues. But in dance music, that doesn't fly. There's got to be a constant, much like in modern styles like hip hop and all that stuff. That's in a sense dance music too. But jazz was the first American dance music, and it has steady rhythm. So when you're playing in a setting like this with trumpet and clarinet, and you don't have a rhythm section, if you can keep steady time, people will want to dance to it, and further, people will want to listen to it because it has a rhythm. It feels like they're walking down the street. It makes them just excited about listening to music that could be danced to, could be moved to. So steady rhythm is very important.
So, Peter, and I want to also toss this question to you, Travis. We talked about that story where you and your brother went to see Jackie McLean, and he said, "Hey, it's great to see young people showing up for this music." Are you seeing young people at your gigs, a lot of people your age and younger who are becoming interested in this music?
Yeah. In New York, there's a big young audience for jazz. It really depends, especially, I guess the biggest thing is that jazz, as Travis knows, jazz education has been entering the high schools and the colleges. It's just been incredible, the new college programs that are opening up for jazz and the Essentially Ellington program, like I mentioned. So a lot of teenagers are really interested in this music now. So,
yeah. Travis, what are you seeing in high school?
So I'm seeing everything from jazz is alive and well with the young people, like everywhere from, I've got kids who play gigs around town and because they're underage and they play in Howie's or Grape Street or whatever, they have to sit in the corner, because they can't be out. But they step up on the bandstand, and that's that's just proof that there's a demand for kids and kids love it, and the musicians get that experience. I also think it comes down to some extent to a framework, right? Like Peter and I were able to play a tune because we knew the structure. And in some ways, that's kind of like democracy, right? Like we've got this guiding document and we're working it out. Like we had to negotiate. We talked about what key we're going to play in. And I picked C because it's the only one I could possibly get through. And we worked it out. And Peter said, okay, he didn't approach it with ego and pick his key. You know, we're working it out in real time. And kids need that. They need that now more than ever when we see around us people not working in harmony with one another. But Peter and I, we're able to harmonize. We can find things that sound beautiful. And that comes through in the music. And kids are attracted to that. I don't care what people say. Like, kids need that. They want that. They love it. They do.
Do you think you're finding something missing in you know, popular music now where, you know, you can, like we talked about before, you've got a MacBook, you go on the internet, you download some samples, you throw it into GarageBand or whatever, and pretty soon you come out with some music. But it's really not something that's necessarily original.
Yeah. So actually, that's a great question. Students still collaborate and do that. Like, I've got several students who they put songs together and they like email files back and forth and they modify them and then they talk about them in class and they're like, hey, let's check this out. But really, I think as a human, we're just kind of craving that interaction. I can't remember who said it, but they compared live performance music to the closest thing we have to a religious experience. And as people, I think while the screens may try to disconnect us, we will not let it happen. Like, people, like the human spirit won't let it happen. They just won't. So kids are attracted to that still, and I think they always will be. They should be.
So, Peter, you mentioned the Duke Ellington project that's going on around the country. Any other interesting projects out there that you guys are getting involved in that we should know about?
Well, yeah, I mean, like this week through the Brit Fest here in Ashland, I mean, exactly what we're doing here, my brother and I do all over the country. We've visited over 100 public schools in, geez, like over 40 states. And it's really been, we've really been thrilled. Also, back in July, we're going to Eugene, Oregon. And we're playing as part of the, it's called OFAM, the Oregon Festival of American Music. So we're going to be back here this summer. And that involves, it's 2 weeks long. So we're going to be doing dozens of performances focusing on the American Songbook. But as part of it, we're also doing a lot of school outreach in Eugene. So for whatever reason, they just keep bringing us back to Oregon. So
it's because we like good music.
Yeah. But we're not going to complain. It's great. It's really great. Yeah.
So we do have quite a few listeners in Eugene. How can people find out more information about that program?
Yeah, the Oregon Festival of American Music. You can go on their website and check it out. Every year they have a different theme that they're doing. And this summer in July, the theme is music from American film. So it's going to be largely based on American songbook and jazz, but all the songs have to be found in great American film, which I think is really awesome. So if you go on the website, you can learn all about it.
And the concerts this weekend, if we can just Kay and Travis let people know when Will and Peter and Ed are playing and how they can get tickets.
Definitely. So Friday night, Pascal Winery. That will be the Anderson Brothers and Ed Dunsavage only. And I think that is sold out, although they should check the Siskiyou Music Project website and make sure. And then Saturday is the big event. That's the Anderson Brothers and Ed Dunsavage with the Ashland Jazz Band and the big band that's being put together by all the schools that are participating, and that is at the Mountain Avenue Theater at Ashland High School at 7 p.m.?
Concert starts at 7, yeah.
7 p.m., and tickets available at grizzband.org.
Yeah, grizzband.org.
That's grizzband.org.
Yeah.
Okay, we also Ashland have links to both of those on the blurb on our website this morning, so you can go to ijpr.org or jeffexchange.org, and we can link you up with tickets as well. Well, that wraps up today's Jefferson Exchange this hour, and we really appreciate you guys coming in and putting you on the spot playing live. That was fantastic. Peter Anderson, my best to your brother, Will. I hope
Thank you.
Feels
so
better
much.
Soon. And also Ed Dunsavage. Hope Ed is listening right now. now. And Ed, I hope you're feeling better as well. Travis Modison from Ashland High School, thank you very much for being with us. And Kay Hilton from the Brit Festival, really appreciate your appearance this morning. And you weren't expecting to be on the radio, but
you gotta be ready for anything in this business.
That's right. Well, that does it for the Jefferson Exchange. I'm John Baxter. We had production assistance today from Angela Decker. Our student assistant, Randy Babbitt, is at the controls. If you're listening in the morning, stay tuned for live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. If you're listening to our evening rebroadcast, news from the BBC is next. Thanks for spending time with us, and have a great day.